Hello, Dale speaking. This is India.
Dale speaking. This is Rue.
Dale speaking. This is Amber.
Ring, ring. Dale speaking.
Say something. That's not a thing. That's a cough.
Breaking on the love day.
There we go.
And action. Welcome to Radio Dale number 59.
This week in music history, the super birthday.
On who charted? It's the last 10 of the top 200 i10
singles.
Yep.
Top 10.
On who charted? It's the last 10 of the top 200 iTunes single sales.
On the 60-second tip with Rue, which I said wrong, it's Rue's 60-second
tip? Sure, yeah, I think that sounds right.
And on Rue's 60-second tip of the week, what to tweet when you hate Twitter.
Oh, for our roundtable, improving your live show.
I don't know what the song's called. And it's a fun one, the Way Back Playback, Alex J. Robinson's Breaking on the Love Thing.
Bam! And let's get started on This Week in Music History. Go!
Happy birthday to somebody.
Oh.
February 20th, 1967. Born on this day, Kurt Cobain. Yes, it is his birthday. February 20th.
That was awkward.
Not to be confused with Kurt Cobain. I don't know who's next.
I'm not.
Do we want to start again?
Okay. February 20th, 1967. It's Kurt Cobain's birthday.
Yay, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Kurt Cobain. You have a hard time saying his name. Kurt Cobain.
Just not a child of the 90s.
He was born in, I don't know.
67?
No, you just said the city, goddammit. The city.
Probably Seattle? In Seattle?
Is he from
Seattle? I think he's from outside of Seattle.
That's what I thought.
February 21st, 1986, Metallica released their third album, the highly influential album, Master of Puppets, considered by many in the metal community to be the best metal album of all time. That's always dangerous to make a statement
like
that.
It's the greatest thing ever.
This was the last Metallica album with bassist Cliff Burton, who was killed. Why did I start that so positively? This was the last Metallica album with bassist Cliff Burton, who was killed when the group's tour bus overturned in southern Sweden. I didn't know that. That's awful.
You didn't know that?
No.
I knew that.
I don't know much about Metallica.
Because I think that's
history.
When they got the bass player with the big neck.
Oh.
Right? Is
that's
that Metallica
crazy.
Jason something?
That sounds right. They're all...
And he was like, bleh. And then he left. And then now they have Mr. Pigtails.
Bass player.
He's a pigtailed
the guy
bass
with
player.
The braids.
Oh.
And he walks like a spider?
I guess braids are metal.
Aren't the only two people in Metallica you need to know Lars and James?
And James.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The bass player is cool because his neck was as wide as his head.
That's always scary.
From the one after.
We can't hang a man like that.
Moving on.
On February 22nd of 97, the Spice Girls started a four-week run at number one on the U.S. singles chart with
If You Wanna Be My Lover.
Yes.
You
gotta get with my friends. They taking it too easy. That's the way.
I'm the least of the Spice Girls lovers here. They were the first UK act to score a number one on the US chart for over 18 months.
What?
I was the Spice Girl bubblegum collector.
Which were you?
I loved Sporty Spice.
Because you look like her.
Well, so. I was just awkward when I grew up. So, and she was like the one that wasn't the typical pretty. Where like Ginger...
And Baby
were like your typical
and
pretty
scary.
And of course Victoria or Posh Spice.
Posh.
Where like Melanie was like the built athletic one, and not so much that I was that,
but wasn't she
just...
also the best singer actually of all of them?
She could she can sing. Yeah. Like it was Posh Spice that couldn't really sing.
She was just there.
Melanie B could sing, scary.
Yep.
Jerry could, you know, carry a tune.
Well, she's the first one to go solo, so obviously she was the best.
She sang It's Raining Men.
She did.
God love her. Well,
support.
She covered it.
Respect.
February 23rd, 1980. U2 appeared at the Moonlight Club at the Railway Hotel in London. Tickets cost only £2.
Oh.
What a deal.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And that was in 1980, so.
Crazy.
Early, early days for those guys.
Now we're at February 24th, 1992. I'm going to follow a theme from earlier. Kurt Cobain married Courtney Love in Waikiki, Hawaii. They were expecting a baby September 10th of that year. And I believe Kurt was wearing pajamas.
I think I have the picture in one of my blogs. I have a blog on our website, Rockstar Wedding Photos.
Yeah.
And I put Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love because he just looks awful.
He's wearing like seafoam green pajamas.
He's wearing like a Hawaiian shirt or something.
Yeah.
Isn't he? Or, like...
I think he had pajamas on for the actual ceremony.
Why? Or whatever. I won't judge you. You did marry Courtney Love.
No.
So.
But
she
now they have a beautiful
podcast.
Daughter. She doesn't Francis speak B. to her mother.
Good.
Yeah.
Good for you, girl.
Way to go, anyway. FB.
FB.
That's what I call her now.
February 25th, 1943. Happy birthday to George Harrison.
Aw.
And what's he from?
The Rolling Beatles.
Bugs. The Beatles.
The Beatles.
He was one of the more, what's the word? Like, he wrote some of the best songs, didn't
yeah.
he, of the Beatles?
Norwegian Wood.
And he was the one that, like, really, like, when they went to India and stuff, like, he was the one that was totally into that vibe,
absorbed
wasn't
their
he?
Consciousness
yes.
and that kind of stuff.
And, like, hung out with, like, Ravi Shankar, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that's too far off.
Yeah.
He might be wrong.
Yeah. Happy birthday, George.
He's got a cute son.
That's true, his son played at the Beatles. Grammy
oh,
thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so February 26, 1932. There are a lot of birthdays. 1932?
All of the same year these people
of them.
Were born?
No.
No.
I messed that up, too. So we're just going to say, February 26, 1932, born on this day, Johnny Cash.
Oh.
So we've had a very interesting week of birthdays.
Yes.
So, to recap, Kurt Cobain, George Harrison, and Johnny Cash were all born within this week.
Yes.
That's
all
fantastic.
In 1932.
No. I'm kidding. It's like, wait, what? Kurt Cobain, you are oldest. You were supposed to be old as shit.
Yes.
No. So, yeah, that's very exciting.
Very cool. It's the Super Birthday Week.
Super Birthday. Happy birthday, Rockstars.
Happy birthday to all of them. So, let's move on to...
Who
charted?
India.
I love it when you say it like that. So cute. Okay, so the last few charts have been very radio focused. Mm-hmm. So I thought let's take a break from that and go to people that actually buy music on iTunes.
Mm.
But I don't like the tops of the charts. You know what's there. It's Katy Perry and Pharrell and it's everything like
yes.
that. So... The last 10 songs in the top 200 are... See if you know these people, because you might not know some of them. Number 190, Grew Up in a Country Song by Jordan McIntosh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
191, Pump Up the Jam, Body Bangers.
What?
That was sounded similar to...
Isn't that from, like,
the
90s?
Pump it. Oh, wow, yeah. It's Technotronic featuring Felly.
Maybe something happened. There was
Maybe.
A reference to it in some
oh,
show.
Oh, I have to listen to it.
Okay. 192, Payday, Classified.
Nice.
193, Heaven Knows, The Pretty Reckless. That's
oh,
a new song. It's a
yeah.
new rock song. It's actually pretty good. 194, How I Feel, Flo Rida. 195, Anything, Headley.
Hmm.
196, Once Upon a Dream, Lana Del Rey.
Oh,
so pretty.
Ooh, it's so good.
It's so good. It's so, maybe we
I
should.
I tried to look for that 2 weeks ago, and I couldn't find it. It
oh,
wasn't
really?
Up the
well,
day we listened to it. So.
Well, maybe,
yeah.
maybe we should buy that after this. 197, Drunk on You, Luke Bryan. 198, Break the Bank, Schoolboy Q.
Awesome name.
Awesome name. He also is on some song with, oh my god, I'm forgetting. Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
Oh.
He's done a tune with them now. 199, Hashtag Selfie.
Oh,
could we be any more, like, dating ourselves here? In the future, you will regret that.
We apologize.
The Chainsmokers, that's who wrote
oh.
that. And 200, Partition Beyonce.
Okay. We got lots of Canadians in the bottom of the charts.
It's better than...
They're not being there.
There at all.
They're making sales.
They're sailing.
They are sailing.
They're selling. English
they
is my first language.
And that
awesome.
Is who charted.
That's who charted.
Yay.
Keep charting.
Keep on charting and keep your stick on the ice. I don't know what that means.
It's an Olympic reference.
So I'm going to do my 60-second tip, and let's see if I can pull it off again. If not, maybe I'll do some clever editing to make it seem like I did. Okay. So, what do you do when you hate Twitter or Facebook or other social media and you have to post? Now, we've encountered many artists who hate social media. They see it as a waste of time, or there's no return on their investment, or in some cases, they see it as kind of selling out. And obviously, we suggest that fan engagement, there are other benefits that outweigh the whole selling out aspect. But if you hate it, you hate it. So here are some ideas. Number one, you could have a fan club run the official social media sites. You feed them info, you feed them pictures and other content so they can share it. And that way, at least the word's getting out from someone that wants to use the social media. Or you could only use the social media you like. Say you like to take pictures, use Instagram. Or Google Plus, just because you're there for some reason and you're one of the only ones. If you don't like Twitter and Facebook, you can just skip it. Or you can only post announcements. Just be clear that's all you're doing. Expect lower numbers. But just tell people when albums and things are out. If you hate it, it will show through. So it's better nothing than negativity.
That's awesome.
60 seconds.
Very nice.
Yeah. That was good. You have some really interesting points in there. Because, like you said, so many people are not, you know, they don't like using social media,
yeah.
Or they fear they don't know how to use it properly.
So. That's another thing, I guess, as an addendum.
Yes.
Some people feel they don't know how to use it when really there's no, the only wrong way to use it is to either post too much about stupid stuff and annoy people.
Mm-hmm.
By stupid stuff, I mean everything that happens in your day, you talk about it, because some people may be interested in that,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know very many that are, or posting way too little. If you post once every 4 months, you're not using it right.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, post what comes to mind.
Sometimes I take a week off.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
I
think that's
all
fine.
Right. We're okay.
Consistency is fine. Is good for building and maintaining. But if you're just using it as a personal, like you're not necessarily looking to build your numbers. You're just, as people find you, they follow you, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yay! So we're going to move into our roundtable, and today we are talking about ways you can improve your live show. Now, I don't think we're necessarily going to be like, do this, do this, do this. It's more of a, here are things that we have noticed at showcases put on by artists, or just one-off shows, or like tour dates, EP release parties, stuff like that, that set them apart from just a band going up, playing, saying their name, telling them to buy a t-shirt and getting off the stage kind of thing. So maybe Amber, if you'd like to pick it up and start off with what's on your mind first.
Well, what's on my mind is exactly what you said, is how to make the shows interesting and how to keep somebody like me, who is a fan / you know, general viewer of your show, how to get me interested or keep me interested in your show. And I actually last week attended a show by the Lovelocks, which is a group we're working with, and it was their EP release party. And I walked in thinking, oh, it'll be, like, I knew they were doing some fun things, but I kind of thought, all right, it'll be an awesome EP release party, they'll play live, ta-da, we're done.
Yeah.
First thing I saw when I walked in was they had got all those paper lanterns that you can get at IKEA or Michael's or whatever, and hung, like, 100 of them from the ceiling.
Cool.
So not only are they playing at a bar that looks pretty swanky already, Revival Bar in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
but they added their own little cute element to it by having all those lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that I thought was really interesting is they had a signature cocktail.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
So the next day was Valentine's Day. They're called the Lovelocks, and they're a duo of two really cute, really talented girls. So they played on that, and they had a pink, almost red drink called the Lovelock.
Smart.
And it was
that's
just like
amazing.
A cranberry vodka type thing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really neat. They also had a raffle, and there was prizes running the gamut of like a Terry Clark show where backstage passes, you could win a trip to Montreal, a basket from a winery, which I won.
Oh, nice.
Jewelry, makeup, tons of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They also had proceeds from ticket sales as well as the raffle go to them as well as to charity. Which was really fantastic as well. So there was really neat elements that they added into the show to really get you as the fan be... Oh, and they also had a photo booth, which I thought was
neat. Oh, cool.
That's
cool.
Like, they rented a photo
booth?
Yeah,
I don't know if it was... Sorry, I say photo booth. It was a photographer. They made a backdrop. They all had props. And again, it was, like, big hearts, big, not like, red lips.
Yeah.
Fun hats. Yeah, like, really cute, quirky.
Mm-hmm.
But, as always, with any type of show, it's about the music. It's about the performance, and it's about selling your music. So they did a really great job at that. I know that with all of that stuff going on at the show, you really walk in that fine line, like that dangerous area of getting too gimmicky and too distracting from the music. I found that it was okay. It was fine. Like, I had a great time at the show. But keeping those things in mind, if you're the type of artist where that kind of stuff could work for your show, be careful not to go overboard. Because, like I said, if one more thing was added, it probably would have just completely taken away from the fact that they were there selling us their album. We also got goodie bags with their album at the end.
Oh, good.
With some really cool... They had... You know, the photographer was there. There was, like, a coupon for his services. There was... at a salon, 30% off their services and stuff like that. So, give back to your fans.
Yeah.
Really appreciate the fact that they came out to your... This was an EP release party. So... make this a big deal. You'll have your tour, your other shows. These girls did residency at the Cameron House for a month before this. And they did the stripped down, really good stuff, like acoustic kind of deal. And then this was their big, there was 8 people on stage with them. So
cool.
So yeah, so it just, I really wanted to mention that and say, and you know, get your guys' thoughts as well on having those kind of elements in a show and... you know, experiences maybe you guys have had at other shows where you walked away, like you said, Rue, like, you walk away and go, oh, I remember that. So, I don't know if you guys have any...
I think that that's exactly what you need to do, like, compared... You're obviously not going to do that every show that you have, but it's a party, so make it a party.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have something that's memorable and... You know, if you go to, like, you know, Average Joe Band, who's got, you know, calling something their EP release party, but... they don't do anything special than that, then it's not any different from a regular show. And I love what you said about giving back to your fans. And I think that people like special events. So people, like, you know, they like seeing, you know, something added to the room to make it your own. You know, you have to make it individual to suit you. And but I didn't get to go to the show, but just based on what you said, it sounds, like, fantastic.
Yeah.
And they did a really good job of blending, like, how to make it fun and still keep it focused on the music
and about them.
It
was the Love Lock, so you didn't forget the branding
exactly
of the band, right?
And with an EP release, I think you can get away with a bit more gimmick.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the little line of, oh, you've stepped over the line, gets bumped up a bit. So you can dress up the stage where if I ever go to a show that's like at the Horseshoe and it's 5 bands, but one band goes up with a giant banner and sticks it up on the back of the stage.
I was all...
flashing lights that they added to the stage and stuff. That's funny. You should probably talk about that, because I always find that kind of off-putting when it's just a normal show, but somebody goes up and takes over the stage for their own branding.
Okay, so it was like 2 years ago, there was a really huge fad with like small bands that probably don't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
To have like flashing... neon lights of their name.
Oh god.
And they would carry them up to the stage and they'd have to set it up and they would have like tube lights everywhere. And when you're on a bill with 5 other bands, like, that just took way too much time to set up, and you looked like an idiot because you looked like you thought that you were this grandiose person.
That's
and
true.
You have like 5 fans in the audience.
Now, if it was their EP release,
that's okay.
And they had a couple of people opening and the lights were off. And then when they go up on stage, you pull a switch and the lights go on. Boom. That's perfect.
But if we have to stand there and watch
it.
And hear somebody say, hurry up.
Yeah,
that's the worst.
Yeah.
That's absolutely the worst. Though, spectacle, like when it comes to outside of EP release shows, spectacle is kind of cool.
Yeah.
If you can pull it off, you have to have the time, the know-how, and you have to be the kind of band that can do it. If Hayden or like Donovan Woods... were to put on a big spectacular light show with flickering lights and dancers and stuff,
it would be
I'd probably be confused. Where it's all right if that's the kind of band. Now, Ménage, which is a band we've worked with before, they tend to put on a spectacle for each of their shows. And one thing that they do really well is they fit it to the setting, but they still keep it big. So they'll come out into the audience and interact with the audience, even if it's, say, the Painted Lady, which isn't a giant venue, mm-hmm. or at the Hard Rock Cafe, they do the same thing. They'll, like, grab people and pull them up on stage and put on a big show. So they put on about as big a show as you can fit into whatever venue they're in,
mm-hmm.
and the spectacle really fits the band because they come across as an arena rock band in a smaller venue.
Right.
So spectacle, there's that line. They get right up to the line.
Yeah.
And it's the people that go over the line that just don't suit putting on a big show. Visuals, I always find are interesting,
mm-hmm.
if you can pull them off. Two best I've ever seen are obviously big names, but Flaming Lips and Naked and Famous do really cool visuals on
mm-hmm.
stage. But they're not just looping videos.
Mm-hmm.
Naked and Famous, they'll sync to the music. So they'll actually have it so that a character is dancing along to
mm-hmm.
what they're singing on stage at the time.
Yeah.
And in Flaming Lips, obviously, they go insane with psychedelic visuals and a camera. He has a camera on his mic, so he'll be singing, and you can see his right up his nose while he's singing, that kind of thing. But again, if you're on tour, it's cool to use visuals to set yourself apart, but make sure it suits you.
And the venues you're playing,
like
you said. If you're playing in a bar, like, what's the one we went to in London to see...
Refused to go to.
Yeah.
Norma Jean's.
If you're playing in Norma Jean's, that's fine.
Yeah.
No one's going to say anything about that. But if you bring in, like, a lighting set to Norma Jean's, which is really a sports bar.
Yeah. It's going to be a little too much.
But
yeah.
Maybe scale it down. Still do, you know, something that's interesting if that's what your
mm-hmm.
group is all about. I mean, I went to two other kind of EP release parties that I went to, or one not really being an EP release party, but Lindsay Kent was an
mm-hmm.
artist we worked with.
She
kind of works on the side doing decorating for weddings. That's the word, decorating. So she's very creative and hands-on. So she turned the basement of the Drake into this, like, almost wonderland of color.
Yeah.
Those big puff balls that you can make out of tissue paper.
Yeah.
She was wearing, like, this one-piece outfit that was bright red.
I remember that.
She also had giveaways before.
Yeah.
Gave away makeup packets, hair appointments, and things
mm-hmm.
like that. So that was really interesting, and I took that away. Also took away the fact that she did an amazing performance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And Meredith Shaw, who her song, one of her EP was called Trouble, as well as a song, and she had a photo thing set up as well.
That's right.
And you got a mugshot.
Yep.
Which you
and
can see on our Facebook page.
Yes.
We have our Olivedale Speaking there getting mugshotted.
Yeah, and it's literally, it was a... What is it you hold when you get your mugshot taken, like the slate?
The slate, yeah.
And it says,
yeah.
I got into trouble, but then it says Meredith Shaw, and it says information
the
on there about her.
Yeah.
So that's all really interesting stuff, because with Meredith Shaw and the Love Locks, having those photos, those are an element to put online
mm-hmm.
after the fact. People get tagged, people share them. So that's stuff that you can share afterwards, as well as if you film the show.
Yes.
So the Love Locks
yeah.
had somebody there filming. So that's another element to take away, too, is... Think about how
content.
You can carry that show on
yeah.
and keep going online with it.
Make it immortal.
Make it immortal forever. I have a couple of sort of, I guess, smaller name and bigger name artists, but things that people did that were innovative or more like a stage performance that I really took away. So I'll start with a big one. I went to see They Might Be Giants back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they did this really neat show where they had two artists, Frank Black, who is better known for being the lead singer of the Pixies,
mm-hmm.
and Frente, who were a big band then, but we don't hear much about them anymore. They were an Australian band. And they had a giant red curtain and performed just on stage in front of the red curtain. So Frank Black came out with a guitar, played, and then Frente came out, played, and then They Might Be Giants came out in front of the red curtain and performed about four or five songs, and then got to one of their biggest, most well-known songs, which is Istanbul, Not Constantinople, which is kind of a goofy song.
Mm-hmm.
And when they hit the end of it, the curtain raised, and they had a reveal. And you kind of thought you're going to have this neat red curtain performance,
mm-hmm.
but they had their stage look like a city park. And Frank Black was sitting on the bench.
Wow.
And he had his guitar out. And the other guys, they had other band members, horn players, in the back corner. But actually had fake trees. And the backdrop looked like it was a sunny day. And, you know, fire hydrant and stuff. And
yeah.
they did this big reveal and then performed the rest of the show in the park.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing obviously takes money. But not really. Like, you could probably do something in an innovative way. But just knowing your stage, that you can kind of dress up the stage, mm-hmm. and having a big reveal like that, that was incredibly memorable.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be something more for a very special event, an EP release or...
Anniversary show,
exactly. Another person who does amazing shows every single time is Rich Acoin.
Oh, right.
Every show he does is a giant spectacle that draws in the audience. He performs most of his songs in the crowd, often under a giant rainbow parachute. Mm-hmm. And he has visuals, he's interesting to watch, he's engaging, and every show is high energy, and it's like a big dance party. Which, if that's what you do for music,
mm-hmm.
then you should take advantage of that. If you're like a performer, how can you bring your performance to the stage
mm-hmm.
to interest people?
Well, the other thing I find really interesting too is when people take their most well-known songs, not all of them, but at least one of their, maybe not one of their massive hits, but
mm-hmm.
a song that people do know, and do something fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is like a massive example, but so kind of think about it in smaller terms, but U2, last time on their last tour, they had this one song on their album, I think it's called If I Don't Go Crazy, or it's Crazy Tonight, or whatever
mm-hmm.
the proper title is. It's really just like a slower, mid-tempo kind of ballad.
Mm-hmm.
When they played it live, they had someone remix it, I don't know who exactly, and it's literally them going around, they have like this big circular stage, and Larry's playing bongos, Bono's just running around, The Edge is playing two different types of guitars,
mm-hmm.
and Adam's up on the stage playing. So, and it's almost like a conga type,
oh, really?
Like disco.
That's awesome.
You should see how Amber's moving.
Yeah,
right now.
Like, she's like, yeah,
very
kind of
dancy.
Very high energy, and the visuals were ridiculous of their faces on the screens. Like, they
mm-hmm.
pre-taped stuff, and it was so fascinating to see a band do that. And again, I understand the scale that they're on, but
mm-hmm.
if you're a band that wants to have fun with your songs, and if you have a song that you've played forever but maybe you're not getting as big of a reaction out of it, because you don't want to take you as a band, if you people love that one song
yeah.
you play on the radio and they want to hear it as
mm-hmm.
is, maybe take one that didn't do as well and screw with it.
Yeah,
do
totally.
Like something completely nuts and
yeah.
see what the reaction is, because that I love that song. I didn't like that song. They did that, and
then,
I was on
yeah,
it.
You
love
the song.
So it was just, you know, I thought that was really interesting
yeah.
to see.
And Bjork does that. Most of her shows, she kind of plays with her music
mm-hmm.
on stage.
I think that most songs, actually, that I end up loving are ones that I didn't listen to until I saw them live.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh my God, what is that one?
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, because some bands just are better live.
They just
they're
are.
A live band
yeah.
or they're a studio band.
Yeah.
yeah.
You need to see them live to really understand who they are. And I know you mentioned, oh geez, I just forgot the name. The ones with the guy that runs in the plastic ball.
Oh, Flaming Lips.
Flaming
yeah.
Lips. They, I mean, they're like the epitome of live show, because
yeah.
they have, again, he runs on a, almost like a hamster ball.
Over the audience, and then this, their entrance is always ridiculous and over the top.
Yeah. And the furry animals.
Yeah.
People dress like furries.
People dress, and they have giant balloons, they throw it in the
confetti,
audience.
And
confetti,
it's just,
yeah.
That to me, like, it suits, again, it suits their music. If Metallica did that, then good God, I think the world would burn down. But, and I want to share, actually, I know we're talking about lots of really cool stuff, and I know we'll have more points probably, but
mm-hmm.
About what to do or how you can improve. There's one point that I never, ever thought of, but is so obvious, that was brought up to me the other day
yeah.
By somebody in publishing, and that is never, ever, 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 ever end your show with a cover.
It's weird because so many people do.
So many people
because
do.
When I walk away as a fan or a listener, whoever, audience member, I walk away, I'm going to say, that cover was awesome. I love that song. I'm going to go home and most likely buy
the original.
First, I'll look for your cover. And if you don't have it available anywhere online for me to buy,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go buy the original.
Hmm.
And then you're
really
most likely going to forget about the show you saw.
That's funny because it's so common that an encore or the very last song is a cover.
Yeah. They said, don't walk away from that stage
yeah.
with doing a cover. You
thinking
have to do
back,
one of your own
I,
songs.
I worked for a band where the last song they played in their encore was always O Canada.
Oh.
Well,
drove me nuts, though.
That's weird.
That's the starting song.
Every
yeah,
concert,
you stand
like,
up.
Not even like a... like
really?
I mean, like, it was a very rocked out version, but still, like, not the last thing that I want to hear before I'm, like, feeling good after the end of the show.
Yeah. Walk away from that show as the artist by playing one of your... I wanna walk away after you played a massive
hit,
fun, energetic tune, so that when you walk off that stage, I go, shit!
I want more!
I'll come see you again.
Don't play a ballad. Don't play a cover. Just play one of your massive songs.
It's funny, because so many people play covers. I think of so many people... The band doesn't come back on, the lead singer comes on with an acoustic guitar and does, like, a soft song. So boring.
Oh, God.
That's so strange, because that's so common.
Yeah, just kind of stood there when they said it to me. I was like, oh.
You are right.
How?
Now, we talk about a lot of spectacle and crazy, unique ideas. I also wanted to bring up the whole idea of letting the music speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
As we said, like, don't lose the music. But there's also completely embracing the music.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw Tori Amos, and she was on stage with a piano.
That was
an awesome show.
Yeah.
Ridiculously awesome show. She is a strange performer. She straddles the bench in a way that is a little shocking.
Provocative.
But she was just playing piano. Like, it's not like Gowan, she didn't spin the piano or anything like that. She was just playing piano. Mumford & Sons. They were just on stage. For most of the show, they were just spread out side by side performing,
mm-hmm.
and there was very little else going on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And Amy Mann, who's one of my favorites, it's always just her with a band.
Mm-hmm.
What sells her show beyond the music is her stories. She has great banter between
the
songs.
When you Google, and maybe you as a musician who's listening, you've done this already, but you Google how to make my live show better, one of the main points that comes up in every article is banter between songs, because that can friggin' ruin it for me.
Yeah.
If I've gone to... I understand there's people that are newer, whatever, not used to it
yet. Or
they
don't feel they have anything to say.
But that's your moment to... Whether you're awkward or you're hilarious or you're an angry person, at least I'm getting to know you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen one band. Let's just use this example. I will not name them, but named a very unfortunate... negative experience that he had.
Yeah.
And just played a really upbeat song.
Yes.
And then they were like, and now I'd like to talk about this horrible thing that happened to me. And then went into a very slow...
The room dropped.
Just went...
And there was at least 3 songs in a row at that point that were sad. And there was such a dead feeling in the air. Everybody
it
was just like...
I get it, and I totally want to... I can connect
mm-hmm.
with what... You know, if you want to bring up that your cat died the
yeah.
week before, I will connect with it, but
timing.
Pick the timing of that. Do not do it right after your, like, big, like...
Your upbeat song.
Woo! And I'm, like, totally, and I'm having a couple of drinks, and then you're like, now my cat died,
oh.
so let's talk about it.
And it's how you do it, too. Donovan Woods is another great banterer, because he's dry humor.
Mm-hmm.
So he's looks very serious, and I was at one show where he had convinced the audience that he was from a different place. So he, like, basically spent most of the show, I think, saying he was from Orillia, and there were people from Orillia in the audience, and they were all excited, and by the end he was like, I'm actually from Sarnia. And then just, but, like, he just plays that up, and he's always really funny in everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
Amy Mann, obviously, is one of my favorites, because she just has a story for everything. And don't force, like, I know, I saw one band, I think it was during Indie Week, that said, I guess this is where we're supposed to banter. And they seemed totally not into it.
That's
like,
they said
like,
that?
Like somebody had told like a manager or an expert they consulted with said, don't forget the
banter. I find
that
insulting. Mm. If I was the one there watching the show, I'd be like, yes, I guess you have to entertain me.
Yeah, that's sort of how I felt. Yeah. And it was obvious they didn't want to. This goes back to the 60-second tip, too. They didn't want to banter. So
don't tell us.
They told
us
they didn't
want
to banter.
Just don't talk.
It showed through. Don't talk.
Just
another
play
cool, also at Indie Week, there's an artist named, well, the band name is one person named The Ending to This Story. And what he did was he had this ambient music that he could trigger with a pedal. So when he finished a song, he would trigger it and you'd have this ambient build while he would do the tuning or get ready for the next song.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you kick it off, he'd start into the next song.
That's
so there was
cool.
never silence.
Right.
It was always like, it sounded like a soundscape building throughout the
mm-hmm.
whole thing. And he'd usually play a bit into it and play a bit out of it, so you had this sort of feeling like it was one long song.
Mm-hmm.
And it would only break when he would banter.
Yeah.
So he'd break and he'd talk a little bit, and then he'd like use the pedal to slowly bring up the ambient music. He'd finish the tuning to make sure he was on. Since he was playing to a trigger track, like Ableton or something, he would trigger the next sample, and then he'd go into the next song.
Or you can be like Death from Above, and you get on stage and realize you're missing a chord, so there's this big, long, awkward moment, and then someone yells, hurry up, and then Sebastian Granger says, you can leave, I have your money.
Oh,
and then
yes.
You go, yes. And then continued silence after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you could do it that way, too.
You could. Another example.
Insult your audience.
Bad stage. Since we're on bad stage manners.
Bad behavior.
I saw a band, and I'm just going to say their name. They're called Arches of Loaf, and they were popular a while back. I don't know if they still are, but they were opening for Weezer.
Mm-hmm.
And they were playing way too long. They played a set that was about 15, 20 minutes longer than Weezer's entire set.
Oh,
they were
how did that
act.
Happen?
Because Weezer only had one album, so once they played all the songs, it would take 40 minutes. But these guys were at 45 as an opening act, and we were all very bored. So people started sort of shuffling and kind of getting bored of it. And the band noticed this, said, lick my
thing.
Word, turned their backs to the audience and jammed for 15 minutes on stage without acknowledging the audience. They just kind of faced each other and jammed.
Whatever.
So that kind of thing.
What and where are they now?
Where are they now? They're more successful than me, but they're
at least
not,
you're not a jerk, Rue.
At least I'm not a jerk. And that's the thing, like, the whole idea of this is you want to make the show more entertaining for your fans. So there are lots of good things you can do, and there are lots of bad things you can
do.
It's
funny that you said just jamming, because one of my pet peeves is, like, some bands are really great jam bands, but there was this band that I still love them. Like, their songs are amazing. And towards the end of the album, they have, you know, like, the jammier songs. But they spent, like, about 30 minutes on stage just jamming. And I left while the jamming happened and then came back for the real songs. Because it's just, like, so self-indulgent. To just jam. Like, give me something I can sing to, especially when you're a brand new band.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want the hooks.
There's a time and place for jamming.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's some people that are just so good at it.
Yeah.
And limit the amount.
Yeah.
You know, if there's, because sometimes bands will go, like we said, like they'll have their massive song and they switch it up a little. Or they haven't, you know, and they kind of go into this jam where I never thought I'd ever hear the song that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But if you're hitting 10 minutes of a jam, you better be doing some pretty exciting stuff in there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm like India. I'm like,
I don't mind jam transitions. Holorado will end one song and kind of jam into the next song.
That's cool.
That's cool if it's like a nice quick transition.
Yeah.
It's the 10-minute break in the middle of the song and then ending the song you started 20 minutes ago.
That's Led Zeppelin for ya.
Not
back in
my,
the day.
Not my bag of coffee.
Well, you need to be on a lot of drugs. Well, not need to be. You would have been on a lot of drugs in those days anyway.
So, because
I have the DVD and they played it. Was it Madison Square Garden?
Was the song Remains the Same?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
And like, was it Stairway to Heaven? They just suddenly go into this other
dimension.
Oh, God. And then all you forgot. Oh, it was Whole Lot of Love, not Stairway. Whole Lot of Love. They're play at the beginning, and then that song has a breakdown anyway. But that was like
when he like makes the orgasm noise.
Yeah,
so like that's when it's.
But they move to like a completely different song for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, it's a good song. And then you're like, da da da. And then all of a sudden, they go back in a Whole Lot of Love. And you're like,
yeah.
I completely forgot about that. So, but again, drugs. So.
So, is there anything we can do to sum up this random conversation we've just had? I think you kind of summed it up well, actually, at the very beginning.
Right.
That,
sure.
That it's, you can't lose the music in what you're doing.
Yep.
But depending on where you're at, whether it's an EP release party or a special, an anniversary, some kind of special performance, or whether it's a showcase or, say, a residency, something that you're doing regularly, or just a regular show, you can kind of raise the level of gimmick. You can add more to your show to make it more spectacular. But in the end, it should always be about the music, and the rest should be there just to keep you in their minds.
You're there to sell you and your music.
Yeah.
It's just how do you do it, and how do you do it creatively.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. And practice.
Practice. Because in the end, Malcolm Gladwell was right. And it's all about practicing.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you see, like, someone super famous forget a line because they haven't sung that song in 10 years, and then and it's so funny because they don't know, and then someone else sings it, and then they're like, thank you.
What's great, actually, you two will, sometimes someone will have a sign that says, like, let me play, whatever, Stay with you, with the song called Stay.
Yeah.
So he'll bring them up on stage and give the person a guitar, and sometimes it's songs from like the late 70s that they've never played live.
Really?
So he'll stand there and the person will play it, and then him, like the band, will kind of follow up.
Nice.
And so, because sometimes Bono has no idea because he wrote the song in like 1979 and has never played it live.
Yeah.
Because people have signs that says, I want to play this song.
That's crazy. That's nice that he, like, lets them.
Yeah, and he'll, like, and I remember as when the guy went up and he was so nervous, he forgot how to, he knew how to play guitar. Bono's up there, like, going, okay, A, B, and he's, like, teaching him before he actually plays on stage. But, yeah, so it's a humbling thing when like you say, you see that, and you're like, you're human.
Yeah.
A funny story for that with Amy Mann was she went up on stage to perform during one of her tours. And she asked, like, she always asks any requests, because she has such a large collection.
Oh, cool.
And somebody screamed out, Lost in Space! And she said,
is that one of hers?
Lost in Space, that's the name of the album, not the name of a song. At which point the band picks up on the third track of the album called Lost in Space that she forgot she'd written. So,
oops!
And it literally was the album she was touring.
The album title.
Imagine being the fan going, what? No?
I'm sorry.
I played Amy Mann mad.
And I've seen so many artists ask the audience for help with lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, how does it start? And then people start it. And
but that's fantastic.
It's
fantastic. Like, and that's a way of making the fan go, like, yeah.
I helped.
Yes.
Freeze frame. Just pump in the air.
Yeah
totally.
That's cool.
Yay, round table. If you have other suggestions or like what we suggested and use it and achieve great success, send checks to 84 Avenue Road. Otherwise, we'd also like to hear from you.
Yes. We'd love to know if you have any additional thoughts.
Yes. And you can get us on Twitter. Get us. Dale_speaking. Or you could just go to dalespeaking.com and find all the various ways to contact us, including our phone number, 416-861-8111.
What's our fax?
Or like I just say 8111. I don't know.
8111. I don't know. What is our fax number?
I don't know.
Do we have a fax?
We do.
Nice.
We share it with the girls downstairs.
Yeah, I don't think we actually have it listed on our site.
It's not our own.
It's in our email.
It's in our emails.
Oh, this is fun.
Do, do,
professional. Fax 416-966. 8775.
If you fax us, we'll fax you back.
We will. We will, totally.
Morse code.
You can do that too. And you know all the rest.
Yes.
We say it every week. Do we have anything else we'd like to say? Closing thoughts.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
And now here's
Amber.
With
what? I just wanted to share my gratitude for everybody. We are doing a way back playback for our song this week, and it is from one of the first singles that I worked here at Dale Speaking.
Ooh.
In the, not only just in general, but in the country format, and that is from a girl named Alex J. Robinson. She's currently no longer active in the country radio or country music world, but we had a lot of success with this being her first album, her first single, right out of the gate. And I think I mentioned this was in February 2008, the song was charting. So we thought we'd just kind of take a trip down memory lane. We took this single to number 16 on the BDS Country Spins chart. Like I said, for an unknown artist right out of the gate, that's pretty fantastic. And Alex had some great success. She was in one of those Ontario commercials.
That's right.
Good Things Grow in Ontario.
There's no place like this.
Oh,
no, Good Things Grow. I think that's milk.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, there's no place like this or whatever it is. But we were so excited when she had that and some fun stuff. With lots of radio folks and things like that. So here is Alex J. Robinson's first single that was charting this time in 2008. We give you Break In on the Love Thing.
Yay!
Yay!
One, two, three. tell me that you want me. You can tell me that I'm fine. I don't know what's up your sleeve, but I know what's on your mind. The telephone.